Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 104, and this week's guest is Wendy Chapman. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 104, and as always, we have the man, the myth, the legend, the ever-knowing know-it-all. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Corey.
How are you?
Sure had to take that.
It was meant with all
meant with love.
All love.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are you doing?
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Got my shorts back on. Got my shorts That's back good. On. So the weather's warming up.
Yeah.
Not much, but the weather is warming up.
How are your calves? Pretty pale.
They're pretty chunky. I've got chunky calves. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Yeah. Shall I introduce our guests before we talk about other bits of my body?
Go ahead.
So we're very pleased. It's taken me a while to persuade this lady to come on the Lensless podcast and talk to us. Some time back, 2019, I think it was 2019, during World Pinhole Day, some of us met up, a few of us met up in Boston. There was other people meeting up in Boston in the United States, but we met up in Boston in Lincolnshire, which was much nicer. And Wendy Chapman made her way over to see us from, I think she drove quite a long way. I can't quite remember now, but I'm sure she drove further than any of us reprobates who were there. So welcome, Wendy. And glad you finally come on, because we did get to chat with you briefly, didn't we, over lunch with a handheld recorder. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we did. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. And I hope everyone enjoys the program.
I'm sure they will.
So was this the meetup that you were talking about, Wendy, where you were saying you were a little apprehensive about meeting four random blokes in a car park somewhere?
Well, that always gives me a little bit of pause. But I overcame my reticence because I figured if they all use pinhole cameras, it couldn't be too bad.
No, all equally as weird. There was the aforementioned Neil Piper. Well, I say aforementioned, I think we were talking about him before we started recording. And Jimmy Hickford. Mm-hmm. Was that it? Me and was there's the four of us, wasn't it?
It was two or three. Yeah, wasn't very many. I remember you guys talking about it.
There is a group photograph, I think, that I posted on a bridge of all of us. So you can look at that if you. In fact, if you search Wendy Chapman or search me, you'll see that picture from then. So we recorded a little bit, managed to trap you and got you to say a few words, didn't we, over lunch that day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did. So you did, and I think somebody had a pinhole camera set up at the table as well.
Yeah, I think I must have done as well. I think Neil certainly did, and I think I did, but I don't know. I can't remember seeing any images on it. I had a mixed bag of results. You got some really good shots that day.
I got a couple of pictures. I made my usual series of mistakes, so there's a few that aren't so good, but I did get a couple that were nice, yeah.
What are your usual mistakes that you find you keep repeating?
I'm getting better. I used to forget to wind on.
Yeah.
So I often have half a frame or a double exposure of some sort. Exposed properly, but I'm getting better at those things. I don't do those as much now, so I'm happy with any progress I make, to tell you the truth.
And have you been finding the last year, really, in terms of what's kept you going, you know, as have you been inspired or not inspired? And
a little of both. I've been, the part that's not good is my family's in the United States, of course, so I haven't been able to visit my sons or any of my siblings or any of my United States friends. So that's been difficult. It's been a year and a couple of months since I've been there, and I usually go there twice a year for a period of time. So that's probably been the hardest thing. I don't have too much trouble staying inspired in lockdown because I like to do so many different types of photography. Mm-hmm. So this last year or so, I've done a lot of film photography with a macro lens on a Canon EOS III that I have. And, you know, I can do that 10 feet from my back door if I want to. So I like doing that. And I've tried to come up with some local projects for the pinhole camera too. And the latest one, it's just of my little village. I was kind of inspired by her name, I think, is Rachel mm-hmm. Brewster Wright. Uh-huh. And she did, I think it was on the Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day, she did a thing in her neighborhood. They had some sort of bingo on the street, and she did the neighbors. And I thought that was a great idea. And so I thought I'd do a little version of that myself. So just recently I started that, and I have another page on Facebook of just 5 pictures from my street of my neighbors in their doorway or in their garden. And since then, I haven't, the roll's not finished yet, but I did our local butcher, and I did the woman that frames pictures for me. And so I'm going to keep doing that until, as a project, until I have done all the people that I know in the village and maybe some things about the village. I thought that was a nice project to do. And I think I'll put it into a little booklet of some kind when I'm done. So that's been a lot of fun. Uh-huh. And yeah. And because I like so many different types of photography, we had a little snow here this winter. And I took a pinhole camera and a couple of film cameras and went up in the woodlands by a place called Broadway Tower. And there's a really nice little woodland there that not too many people go to. And I was able to have fun trying different sort of forms of photography up there with the snow and the fog and the trees. And that was really fun. And I made some pictures there that I'm very happy with. So I've been able to. Although that one almost didn't work because one day I tried to drive up there with my little Mini, you know, and I'm from Wisconsin in the United States, and I used to drive through snowstorms where you get 7-8 inches of snow, and my little Mini couldn't even, its tires were spinning on the flat ground with an inch of snow, you Yikes. Know, so I was almost thwarted on that one day, but yeah, otherwise I've been doing okay with the lockdown as far as photography goes. So.
I really like the beginnings of your little project photographing your neighbors, because Rachel came on the Lenses podcast mm-hmm. pretty soon after mm-hmm. World Pinhole Day when yep. she published those photographs, because she was given the Ondu camera
mm-hmm.
and she went out and just did her neighbors in that street party. Was it a street party? I think it was a street party they were having.
Yeah, it was I think she called it a bingo street mm-hmm. party. So yep. I don't know how they did that, but that's, I think, what it was. Yeah.
So you've got five or six pictures here. You mm-hmm. know all these folks well, or did you just go and say, yeah. Hi, I'm Wendy, got a pinhole camera?
Say cheese.
No, I know all of the people in those pictures. I know all of them very yeah. well. Are very, you know, they've been my neighbors for the last 4.5 years, so... yeah, we get along really well. A couple of people wouldn't let me take their pictures, though. I have a little neighbor. I live in my house is attached, and my little neighbor to one side, she's 84, and she wouldn't let me take her picture, but I'm going to show her the print. I've been, before, while I was waiting for the podcast, I was making prints of those pictures, and I'm going to show her those and tell her that, you won't even be able to tell who you are, because they're not focused, so maybe she'll let me take her picture after
yeah, all. Yeah, I mean, did folks know you, but did they know you make photographs with a pinhole camera?
Yeah, some of them do. And the people that are in those pictures are all really interested in what I'm doing. They're all real good sports. And I've taken pictures of a couple of them before, yeah. So not with the pinhole camera, but so they're good sports. And actually it's expanding my acquaintance with some of the other neighbors too, because if they come out on the street, I just accost them and ask them if I could make them part of my project. And so far people have said sure. So I'm really happy about
it. So is it going to begin to the point where they're like looking out their windows before they come out, like, is she out there again?
Probably. Who's that crazy? It's that crazy mm-hmm. neighbor of ours that's always out there with that pinhole camera.
Hey, at least you're outside doing stuff and not staring at a computer. You know? Mm-hmm.
Which of your many pinhole cameras were you using for this project? Have you got just one that you think you're going to be using?
Yeah, I'm going to use one camera and mostly one film. Except, of course, the first roll of film I chose was the only roll I had of that, but. So I ordered some more, but yes, yeah, so I'm using my camera called the Carlos.
I'm not familiar with that one.
and 6x7. It's a beautiful cool. camera. They're handmade. I learned this from another person who will not be on your program by the name of Daphne, who I think you both know. And she bought one. In fact, she bought one that's, mine is called number 203, and I think hers is 204 or the other way around. Anyway, it's a 6x7. It's a beautifully made wooden camera. So nice. It was really a nice camera to use. It's really easy to use, too. It doesn't have a shutter as such. You have to have a cable attached to it. So it's easy to use. I had problems with it at first, but I think they were my problems as usual. Like another one of my common problems is not necessarily having the roll of film really tight.
Yeah, getting fat rolls.
Yeah, and I thought that's what happened with this project, because when I took it out, it looked like it, but I was so lucky. It didn't cause any problems with the pictures. So I think it's just learning to be careful about how tight you get the roll right from the start.
I have a trick for that. If you, when you use your plastic take-up side, the plastic take-up side, if you can find the ones that Fuji used to make, if you look inside the slot that you push the tag, the paper tag through, there's a little tooth in there. So if you take a single hole punch and hole punch a hole right in the middle of your paper tab that you push in there, it'll catch that tooth and it'll stop you from getting fat rolls. Only the plastic ones that Fuji made, though, are the only ones that do it. I wish, and then they would send the rolls with a hole punched in it already. And it would let you do that. Oh, that's why I saved all my rolls.
That's too bad they don't do that anymore. Uh-huh. That's a great
idea. Is it on older Fuji rolls? Because I've not noticed it on... I don't shoot much Fuji stuff, but I have shot some.
Yeah, it was the... mainly for me, I can only just say it was on the Acros rolls, because that's all I really ever shot of Fuji. But look inside that little slot where you push a paper through. There's a little T, looks like a little T in there, and it's a little tab, and it'll catch your film, and you can.
I've started really saving those dreaded plastic things now, because I feel so guilty about throwing them in the bin.
Too.
I don't know what to do with them. Really, somebody on Twitter said, "Wouldn't it be nice if #Ilford or @IlfordPhoto would take these back?" And they didn't respond, and I don't know if they didn't respond because it's a big headache for them, but. I think there is some UK law, I'm not a lawyer, but there is some UK law which requires manufacturers to take back packaging. They have an obligation, and it's not something that's terribly well publicised, but they do have an obligation.
Right.
Yeah, they do have an obligation, but I don't know whether it would apply to this or not. But either way, there's got to be, surely there's got to be some workable system where folks can send these back. I mean, most of us would probably send them back just at our own cost, without expecting any reward. I mean, just for the
just that chucking and throwing it away.
I use a couple of photo labs. I haven't been developing my own film, and one of the ones I I use was a photo lab, and they send things your film in plastic sleeves. I had a collection. I didn't throw any of those away when I put my film into, archival kinds of things. And so I kept them all, and I sent a huge amount back to them. I don't know if they were happy with me or not for doing that, but I thought, I just didn't want to throw any of it away. I didn't feel right.
I'm tempted to just save the Ilford ones. I won't complicate, because mostly I'm using Ilford. Just so I save the Ilford ones, put them in a jiffy bag, and when it's full, put them in the post and see, see what they say.
Why not?
You, cool. Wendy, you shared a photograph to me and Corey with your collection of pinhole cameras on. Maybe you can post that to the Lenses Podcast Facebook group so folks can know what we're talking about. So I recognize some of these. I was just trying to work out. So you've got, I can see the Dora Goodman one. I can see a Zero, the nice Zero image, and a nice Holger pinhole wide. I can see a reality, couple of reality, so subtles. I can see an Ondu. And there's the two on the right-hand side, one of which must be the Carlos, and I imagine it's the one on top of the other one.
I just said that. It's sort of a... I said the Carlos is the one that's up above. It's really...
What's the one below? That's more a square format.
That's a really cheap little camera called Ronica. Yep. Or Ronica.
I've seen those.
Really, they slide the front cover. The front slides out. You know, if you look at the picture I have there, you can see there's like a little notch on the side there, and you just pull it out, and that's how you load your film. It's a delight to use it. It's very simple, and the front's a dial. You can see that you just turn it one way to open the aperture, and you turn it the other way to shut it. And then the one on the left side. In the front, the little one on the left, that's the Dora Goodman camera next to the Zero, or next to the reality system.
Just going back to your Carlos, because I think that's the most, in my mind, that's the most attractive aesthetically out of all of those cameras. But that's...
Yeah, it is. It's
got a little viewfinder on
it,
hasn't it? A little peephole.
It does, and it looks like you're looking through a fisheye lens when you look through that.
It almost looks like a regular camera, doesn't it, in a way, like made of wood.
Yeah.
And I like the 6x7. I like 6x7. I like square format a lot, but actually I've been using my RB67 quite a bit on some projects in our church. And I prefer that format. If you're going to have not square... then 35 mil I find too long, really, you know. And I like that just that extra bit of aspect ratio or extra bit of width that 6x7 gives.
Yeah, I think it's nice too.
I like 6.45 is close to the aspect ratio of 6x7. I like that too.
Yeah, there's something about it, and I use a fair bit of 35 mil film, you know, but I don't use an awful lot of it in the standard frame. I'm using it in a panoramic, you know, camera, one of those Horizon things, or in a Bel Air or something with a 35 millimeter back, because they're quite useful for, you know, panoramics, aren't they? 35 mil. I much prefer it for that. But yeah, very nice, Carlos. Yeah. So Daphne, I'm sure I've reached out to Daphne on more than one occasion, but I think she's a bit reticent about coming on, or denies that she's got any talent or something, which is clearly not the case.
No, I think she would. I think she would be very interesting because she has quite a collection of.
You work on it for me. That would be good.
Andrew will tell them
about that. What about homemade pinhole cameras, Wendy? Are you a maker?
Not really. I haven't done much of that at all, other than just that 3D printed one I put together, and realized I didn't sand it enough in the beginning, so I had to take it apart and sand it again. But no, I haven't done much of that. I've done a little bit of developing, not much of that either, because I got a little bit discouraged with all the dust spots and things like that. Yeah. So I've knit a little bit more. I really enjoy making the pictures, composing pictures, editing them, things like that. But I haven't done a lot of the technical aspects of pinhole photography. This year, one of the things I want to start to do is digitally scan them myself. I haven't even done that yet. A lot of people do that, and there's a lot of people making devices for digitally scanning your DSLR. So I think I'm going to do some of that this year, and do a lot of printing things this year.
If you're going to be just posting them to Facebook, I would look at that Pixelator. That thing, I have one of those, and I like mine. Mm-hmm. I think it works good.
Yeah, I actually bought it. I haven't used it yet.
Yeah, it works good.
That's what I hear. It's really nice.
Pretty much all. I use that in the film lab app for scanning.
You just do that on your phone, though. You just do that on your phone, you were saying a few weeks ago.
Yep. Just take a snap of it, drop it in the Pixelator, take a picture of it, and then just post it. Because that's all I'm doing. I'm not trying to do high-res prints from mine, you know. I don't see the point of getting into doing all that and scanning and drum scanning and wet scanning.
I don't even understand. I don't even understand what that is. I know people do it.
I've mostly been using Silverpan Silverpan Photo Lab to to take care of my negatives and scan for me, because the fellow's name is Duncan there. He does such a terrific job. I mean, nice. And he has several kinds of developers. So if you're into that, you know what, if you like
a certain look,
different developers. Yeah. He's got several, and he makes recommendations for the type of film that you have. Yeah. So that's kind of made me a little lazy too, because sure. he does such a great job, yeah. and the pictures look so good when we get them back from him.
But
so.
The other good thing about doing that system is you can just kind of just quickly proof what you want to send to him to have him do, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to try to do that this year and see how that goes. And
cool.
you know, that's a good year goal for me.
So what got you into doing pinhole, Wendy? What kind of?
Well, I've been doing photography for a long time, and I was looking at some pictures online by a photographer named Paul Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who he is. He's does mostly digital photography, and he's won awards. He's really a good photographer, and I was looking at a few of his woodland pictures, and then I came across some pinhole pictures that he had done, and kind of blown away just like that. I thought they were beautiful. They're black and white and kind of contrasty, and he had things like Lyme Regis. He had some of the pictures from there, some seaside pictures. I just love them. Yeah. And so then that was a few years ago, and I didn't know much about I've looked at the history of photography and things, but I didn't study it to the point where I really understood what pinhole really meant. And so I looked at that a little bit, and then I did some more research and came across some pinhole pictures by Ian Burton, who you all mm-hmm. know. And he had a couple of really nice photos, and I looked at the camera that he had. And so that's what I did. I just looked at a few different people that were making pinhole photos, and I really liked them. And I thought, well, I could do that. And I was already starting to use, I have a Pentax K1000 that I got about 35 years ago. And I was doing a little bit of film photography with that. So, well, why not give this a try? So I bought the Reality So Subtle. The worst camera I probably could have bought to start with, because it's not easy to use, the 6x12 Reality So Subtle camera. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know why, because I like kind of a panel or semi-panel cropping of pictures sometimes. And I thought it looked cool. That's probably why I got it. And so I bought it, and it's a great camera, but until you really get used to loading the film in it, it can, you can swear
oh,
a
yeah.
lot when you do that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's got two aspects in the front, a lower and upper pinhole. So right away, you know, I did something very complicated for a beginner in pinhole photography, but I've persevered with it, and I really like some of the photos I've made with it. And then I decided I would try the 6x6 format, and I got the 0 6x6 camera, and I really enjoy that camera too. So I that's how I got into it, though. I just saw Paul Mitchell's pictures online, and I thought they were beautiful, and after that I started looking at other people's and decided I wanted to see what I could do with it.
Cool. Yeah.
And that was about three years ago.
You're very much an anglophile. I think that's quite clear, just having met you and having talked to you, and you love the British countryside. How did you come to be here?
Got on a plane or a boat, Andrew, and guess walked up.
Yes, I did. I took a plane over, Andrew. That's how I got here. No, I'm in a relationship
with a person,
so that's how I came here. And I'm here versus the both of us being in the States, because I was at a point in my life where I could sell my business and retire from working. Nice. And it made sense for me to do that. So, and it's beautiful here. Yeah. You're right. I do really love the British countryside. I love all the different parts of the UK and Ireland. There's so many interesting things. There's so many different environments here in a small area compared to the United States. Has, of course, wonderful, beautiful things there, but it takes a long time to get to a lot of those things. So I just think it's that's how I ended up here in the first place.
And Do you think that pinhole photography just suits your, you know, the when you go to these, a lot of coastal places, a lot of woodlands, and the use of the pinhole, that's just what you gravitate to now, do you, or are you still using?
That film, probably yeah. Film, I would say. Yeah, I'd say film. I have, I really enjoy film photography now, and I probably enjoy it as much or more than digital photography, I think. I like, even though there's a lot of things that can go wrong, but I really enjoy it. And I think, yeah, I like the seaside types of images, the long exposures mm-hmm. with film, I think are really pretty with the coastal areas. I really like woodland photography with a pinhole camera, but I think I find that to be the most difficult because of, I'm not a big fan of the overexposure of the sky, and it's really hard not to get that in pinhole pictures, I think. I think it's a difficult thing because you have longer exposures, and oftentimes when I take pictures, I'm not really happy with the results, but if I can get it right, then I really am happy with the woodland stuff because I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. So you uploaded this big album to the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. So apologies to folks who aren't on Facebook, but maybe Wendy will put a few more of them onto either Instagram or Flickr. But
okay, I'll work on that, Andrew.
Andrew.
You're so sorry.
I was looking at some seaside ones, and there's a panoramic shot which I guess is, I don't know, is it 6x12? It might be 6x12. And there's sea, longish exposure, and a kind of diving board thing in the middle on a concrete. That's Ireland, Galway. Is it?
Yeah, that's in Galway. My cousin came over to do some genealogy. Because our fathers are Irish and Scottish and English. And so we went to Ireland and we went to Northern Ireland. And this is in Galway. Yeah, and that's with with the Holga.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So it is 6x12 aspect. I may have cropped, who knows. But that's originally what it would have been.
You got some nice results with that Holga when we were in that church. Do you remember that church we went to on World Pinhole Day?
Mm-hmm. I do. That was those were a pleasant surprise to me. Those came out really well. Yeah.
You were just using you were using the Pinhole Assist app, I think, weren't you?
Yes, that's what I was using.
There's two or three shots. Well, there's a load of colour shots that follow on from that one, the sort of diving board thing, whatever it is. Are they all in the same area? Are they all in Ireland? You've got
take a look. Yes, the picture that you're talking about with the diving platform, that's on the there's a seafront mm-hmm. walkway there in Galway, and then the next one is just down, not very close to that, just down the path from that where there's a you can see a Ferris wheel in the background and a red and white.
I can see you silhouetted in the bottom as well. I think. That was it.
I think that's another person looking down at me. I think so. Yeah. Wondering what
busted.
Kind of ridiculous thing I'm doing. Yeah.
And on my big screen, I'm blessed to have this big screen with your images on there. The next one after that is a square one with beautiful sky, beautiful blue.
That was an accidental double exposure. And that's in the Gower Peninsula. That's the name of that beach is, I'm forgetting the name of that really famous beach in the Gower Peninsula. Not Three Cliffs, but...
Oh, I don't know.
There's a restaurant, and I can't remember the name of it off the top.
That's a double exposure, is it?
I will eventually, but that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look on the edge of the sand up towards the green, you can see the... Two white, yeah. But I thought it came out kind of interesting. Sometimes those double exposures are more appealing than just the natural look of the scene.
I think they are. They're gimmicks, right, Andrew?
No, double exposures are great.
No, I'm just picking.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I like the, I have never got this good of results with the Provia.
But these
ones that you have in Venice, I like this one with all the boats cruising by. I don't think it's gondolas because it looks like there would be a lot, but maybe it was just random people in their boat.
That was probably a little motorboat that went by.
Yep. What were you shooting these with? If you remember, it just says Venice.
Probably this was the 6x6. This was probably the zero. Cool.
Yeah. You uploaded those fairly recently, didn't you? I'm just trying to. Oh, there you go. On January the 6th. Mm-hmm. You sit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going.
I was there a year ago in January before the year before the lockdown and before the pandemic. I was in Venice. And so when the pandemic hit and Italy was hit so hard, and at first we didn't realize we all would be hit that hard, but that was kind of poignant for me, having just been and visited there.
My sole sheet of pinhole pictures from Venice were also on the Zero 6x6 because that was the only pinhole camera I had at the time. But all mine are in black and white. I've been looking at them and I've scanned them all, but I'm going to make some prints. And it really inspired, I was inspired to go back and revisit the Venice pictures after you shared them to the Facebook group. The one, just so vibrant, aren't they? You've got that turquoise water, the one with the, and then there's electric, a gondola just poking into the frame on one of these there, and the colorful buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love that about Venice, and I thought the Provia did pretty well with the colors. I probably worked on to suit my taste for what I thought the colors were like there, but that's part of the appeal of Venice is all those pastel colors on the buildings. When we were there, it was just after it had flooded. They had the highest tides they'd had. I think it was the second highest recorded tides they had ever had. And the flooding, I mean, the damage was just incredible. You could see it on the buildings. You could see the wet marks up about shoulder high.
Well, wow. I think,
the buildings and some of them. And we talked to a shop owner when we were there, and she said that the floods came in and she had to go every morning I wish I could remember exactly how many days, but several days, and get the water out of the shop, sweep it out, clean it out. I mean, it was really amazing. And they're used to floods, so they cope with it. And there were sandbags everywhere, and they have flood defense doors, which I had never seen before. I have seen them in the UK since, when people live right next to a river and it floods. But that was really interesting to see how people cope with that.
Whereabouts in Venice did you stay?
I stayed on one of the side canals in this lovely building. I can't remember the name of it now. Right. I wish I could.
No, that's fine, because it's one of those things, isn't it? I don't know how long you were there for, but it's very, you can get sucked into that. There's a tourist trail that pretty much goes from the railway station to St. Mark's Square. But you don't need to, I'm sure you realize, you don't need to go far, do you, away from that route?
No, that was the best thing about Venice and photography is we stayed, it was off a side canal, so it was off the beaten track, but it wasn't far from anything, and we just walked all day. And I would love to go back with the pinhole camera and film cameras, because there's just an infinite number of things to photograph there if you take your time and walk around. And you can just walk around all day and get lost in all the little areas, and then you'll eventually find your way back, because it's so small. It's just wonderful. It is. I just love that. And I had kind of a hair-raising experience there, though. It was I saw something I wanted to take a picture of, and I walked away just a little ways by myself. I was with my partner, but I walked a little way down this little tiny passageway to take a picture of something. And I was just about done with it. And I just turned around for some reason. There was a man standing about 12 inches from my back.
Woo.
And then he just walked away, like as if, oh, sorry. Like just, but I think what he was going to try to do is to steal.
Pickpocket.
Reach into my backpack and steal things from me because my backpack was kind of like a purse. So
yeah.
So that was the only negative thing that happened there. The rest of it was, but it was a good lesson. Nothing happened. I was lucky and I changed my strategy after that.
Yeah, definitely.
I've just been looking back on some of your Facebook posts to the Facebook group, and another one from our worldwide pinhole day with your 6x6 camera and Fuji Acros. I don't know whether that's the original. Mm-hmm. Was that the original film or the new stuff?
Yes, that's the only stuff I have.
And it's when I didn't get any kind of pictures, anything as good as this. I don't know. This was one of the churches we were in. I can't remember. Oh, the stump. They call it the stump, didn't they? The one.
Yeah, you took a nice picture in there, Andrew. You took a picture of a Bible or something.
Yeah, I was quite pleased with that. But this has got beautiful texture of, I think it's in the choir stand, so you've got the wooden seats and the things where they put the song sheets on, and just a beautiful balance of exposure. I don't know if it's on your upload, but it was. If you search on Wendy's name in the Facebook group, you'll see this. It was on the 7th of June she posted it. Reality So Subtle 6x6. And some of those exposures we were making in there were half an hour, weren't they, I think, depending on what film you had.
I think they were, they were about, if I remember correctly, there were some that were around 15 or 20 minutes.
This is a beautiful picture because you've managed to, by hook or by crook, retain some detail in that stained glass window right at the back there, and then right down into the, because most of this is about the dark wood and the tones on the wood, and you've got some lamps that have, you know, specular highlights, but you come to expect that. But when you're faced with a scene like that, Wendy, and you've got your app out, where would you think you'd be pointing your meter? Yeah,
meter.
Just so Corey knows, because Corey likes to understand all the tricks, so he can copy people.
I would point it at the brightest place, the darkest place, and what I thought was the middle.
Yeah.
And then I would because it's guesswork for me a little bit, then I would look at the differences between the highlights and the shadows and the middle and try to meter it around based on that, and try to come up with something where I thought I wouldn't completely blow everything out and I wouldn't completely lose all the shadow detail. Or I might decide to lose some of the shadow detail, especially in the corners, because I wouldn't think that would be as important as the more central part of the picture. I would, and that's probably true of this one. I let some of the shadows go.
Well, you did. Well, I suppose it's people can get overly worried about pinhole exposures, but it's the same as normal exposures, isn't it, really? You evaluate it in much the same way. It's just that when you factor in that reciprocity, it's often a lot longer. Wow. So when you sent this off to your Silver Pan Labs, what would you have said to your man there about what, and do you remember? Did he recommend a particular developer?
This one, probably before I went to them. And what I don't know if I would have said, I don't know if I said anything about these. Because I just did what the, I thought I probably muted her correctly, and you're saying it was Acros. I don't even remember that it was Acros, but if it was Acros, you don't have to worry too much about reciprocity. Mm-hmm. So I probably didn't say anything to him about it. Now, I probably would say a little bit, depending on the film stack and everything, because I think I know a little bit more than I did then. Not that I consider myself an expert on how to best develop film by any means, but I, you know, depending on how I, if I, like, what one of the things I like to use is a film Delta 3200, mm-hmm. and I rate it at about 1250, mm-hmm. and so I would always let the lab know how I've done that, and then they can, and I trust him to make.
I suppose if you've got that kind of relationship with a lab, if you're not doing it yourself, if you're in a situation like this church one where, or any situation where you've got a vast range of stops, you know, between different subject brightnesses, then then I guess it's that's quite important to tell him, isn't it? Because then he could use a compensating sort of developer or something to try and control, you know, not develop the film too aggressively. Mm-hmm. I think is probably the way forward in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, isn't that what you would do, Andrew? If you had a wide range of tones, wouldn't you go with a developer that's very
like Diaphine or something?
I don't know. I've not used it. To be honest, I mostly do things in ID11, but I'll use PyroCat, and that's quite forgiving. But or I'll just cut the development time down if I know it's particularly contrasty. Yeah. But yeah, you've done a great job. Dungeness, I think you love as well. Tell us a little bit about your love affair with Dungeness.
Yes. Well, I do. I've only been there once, but I would love to go back there and spend some time because I think that's an interesting place on a pinhole with a pinhole camera for sure. I mean, the all those boats and buildings, just sitting on that sand like that they really look nice with a pinhole. And I went there once and took several pictures there. Now I'd like to go back because of course, looking at the pictures, I have different ideas about how I'd like to take some of the pictures. So, yeah, I'd love to go back there. It's a great place to see these boats. And there's a few places like that in the UK, isn't there, where there's just these old boat yards and these boats are just there and they're just returning to nature, so to speak. And it would be really interesting to go back and spend some more time there and try some different compositions and. I'm sure I only touched, just scratched the surface, as many people love Dungeness.
Is that, where is that at? Located?
It's on the east coast of the
It's right down the bottom of the east coast, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about as far to the south and the east as you could probably go. There's a nuclear power station there. So I used to go there a lot on business trips in the early 90s, very early 90s. And I did a lot of photography down there when it perhaps wasn't quite so popular now. I think the folks, because there's people living all along in those houses, you know, and you have to be a little bit respectful of them because they, you know, you can't just go.
Yeah.
It's very easy to suddenly find yourself standing in their garden, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's cottages along the road, Corey. There's a series of cottages, and there's one that's a sort of a landmark. I can't remember who lives there. Maybe Andrew does, but there's a well-known cottage, and then on the other side is this like the stone beach that's vast and flat, and there's all these boats just sitting way up on the beach, some closer to the shore. There's old like rail lines, and it's really a fascinating place. And Andrew's right, it's quite well photographed. And when I was there was no one else photographing it, but there I'm sure sometimes there is, and there's even workshops there, you know, photographers take people there to photograph. So it's a well-known place, but there's a good reason for it. I mean, it's very photogenic.
Derek, filmmaker, the late Derek Jarman, I think his house is one of the most iconic down there. I don't know who lives there now, whether it's just preserved, but he lived there until he died in the late 80s, early 90s, I think. But he would collect artifacts from the beach and make art installations in his front garden, you know, with like bits of driftwood and things.
I think there's still some of that there.
That's cool.
And you went on, you mentioned Ian Burton earlier, and him and Andrew Atkinson, used to get together and run the pinhole mm-hmm. workshops, didn't they? And now I think Andrew now runs the pinhole Facebook group. But I think they've probably, mm-hmm. at least for the moment, stopped workshops. But you went on a few of those, didn't you?
Two. I went on two. When I first got a pinhole mm-hmm. camera, I went up to Whitby, and Ian and Andrew had their first workshop up there, and it was fun. Yeah, the very first thing I did was mount the pinhole camera on the tripod and drop it on the ground. So, you know, that, that gives you an idea of what I'm like. And they were kind to me, you know, they were very, very patient. And so but that was a fun workshop. We had a good time that day. And I think there was about three or four other people, and it was lovely. And I had a couple of pictures I was happy with from the day, and that's all you can ask for when you're yeah. learning, I think. And then they did another workshop, and mm-hmm. we went to Blythe and Craster and that whole area, and it's up north on the eastern coast of the country, Corey. And that Blythe was a real I have some pictures that I put up here for you guys to look at if you wanted to. There, you'll see Blythe, and there's a picture of a whole bunch of boathouses that are in black, and it's black and white. And then above that, there's a couple of black and white pictures of the shoreline mm-hmm. and some old World War II installations. That was from cool. that workshop that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. And then the one after the boathouses is a double exposure. It's a square picture, and there's a circle yeah. in the middle that was actually a life preserver.
That's on. And that's on your Flickr site as well, that one, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that one, that was kind of, I can't say you would ever get that fisherman in the center of that circle
yeah, so this
if you tried, you know, so unless you Photoshop.
That was Pan S, so that's
that the camera.
That's good. Mm. But you've got this circle mm-hmm. right in the middle, and yeah, the fisherman, bang, bang, smack in the middle.
I couldn't believe it.
It's great.
And he didn't move either. So yeah. that whole series is from that workshop, and that was we really had a good time doing that. And again, they were very supportive. I mean, if they ever do workshops again, I highly recommend them for anybody just getting started in pinhole photography, because they are very nice people, and they know a lot about photography in general and pinhole photography, and you'll learn.
And they know the area really well as well. Yeah. I mean, it's Andrew has a little camper van now, doesn't he? Or a little mobile home thing, and he drives when he can get out after COVID. He drives out, and he's using pretty much exclusively now the Harman 4x5 Curry. Uh-huh. Ian Burton, we had on the show, I don't know if you remember, it was way back. His buddy was Andrew, and Andrew didn't want to come on. He's, you know, keep working on him. We'll get him on one day. But he's producing some gorgeous work. Some of it he shares in the either in our Facebook group or his own on Pinhole. But he's
a really good camera.
He's hit upon a style, a very sort of clean style of producing these images, very kind of minimalist seascape architecture shots, and they are just wonderful. So, I think he's probably just settled on that camera now. Possibly one film stock as well. I can't quite remember what he's using, but I know he sold off, well, to me actually, he sold off a load of 120 film. So I'm guessing he's using predominantly sheet film there. You'll have to remind us if you're mm-hmm. listening to this, Andrew. Yeah. But yeah, so him and Ian, I don't know if they'll do any more, but great Hopefully. Work.
I think it was hard to mm-hmm. get enough interest, you know, for people to go, which is a shame, because it's a real enjoyable genre of photography. So I encourage people to give it a try, and their price for the workshops was reasonable, and they develop mm-hmm. a roll there of film go. For you, and they send you prints. It was terrific.
We're heading up there in July, up for 10 days up on the Northumberland coast, Wendy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, hoping I can at least catch up with Andrew at some point, or Ian, you know.
Well, that would be great. I'm sure that would be. Yeah. You'd have a
you should
fun
do an
time
interview
with
him, Andrew, with Ian, since he doesn't want to come on
Andrew.
The station.
Andrew,
Andrew, I'm sorry, yeah.
One thing that happened with the second workshop I went on with them is if you look at the pictures, there's a There's a picture of Dirtle Door, and it's right, it's sandwiched between that and the gallery at the Guild where I sell pictures as the color one. But it's in between the two. There's a woodland picture. Well, we were done with the workshop and driving home, and it was getting close to dusk, and we drove past this woodland. I don't know if it's public or private or whatever it was, and we just, you know, squealed the brakes. And so we had to jump. We turned around and parked the car and jumped out, and we all took pictures of that woodland because it was so beautiful. And Andrew took a picture, a large format picture, similar to the one that I have here in my pinhole. And I wanted, his is beautiful, so I got it from him. And I was going to buy it from him, but he gave it to me, nice. Which was even nicer. And I'm looking at it right now. It's on the wall in my little room here, so... That's a really nice memory. It was a beautiful scene.
Cool. You should, right? Mm-hmm. Andrew?
Yeah, well, no, I'm just still looking at... Actually, I'm just looking at the ones on Flickr because they're all Whitby. Yeah,
slipping through them as well.
Yeah. So you've got a Harman large format camera, haven't you? Have you just not used it yet, or are you... Yeah.
Oh, me? Yeah, I do. This is... kind of embarrassing, but typical of me. So I've got it. And do you know the photography get together called Connected?
Oh yeah. Rob yes, Knight, yes. Yeah. Now you mentioned Rob.
Yeah. So I've attended that. That's where I met Andrew Atkinson and Ian Burton. Okay. Is attending Connected is where I met them in person the first time. And then I had a couple of pictures in the exhibit that they had there, and they did one, and they were having a little workshop as part of the Connected weekend. So I went on it, and I had just purchased the camera, the 4x5 pinhole camera. And so the first time out, I was using it, and I managed to get a little crack somehow in the holder. So I probably ruined the film. It's still in there. I have exposed two pictures, and I have another one that I think I cracked the holder, and I haven't developed either of them. And I got discouraged. I should develop them. So silly. I should. I should do it. I know.
Well, it's easy if you're doing it at home, isn't you? If you haven't to send it out, then with large format, it starts becoming more of an issue, doesn't it?
I don't think I probably would even shoot large format if I had to send it off.
I should. There's no excuse though. It's not that hard to develop it. I know that, and I haven't gotten rid of it.
That's a good camera. That Titan. If I just didn't like dealing with the film holders, that was my only reason for. Because I had it for a little while too, and I got some really great. It's super sharp.
Yeah, I bet it is. I've seen Andrew's. Isn't that what Andrew Atkinson uses? And his has really sharp. Yeah. Really nice.
So there we go. So what's next for you then, Wendy? What when we're finally allowed to roam the country more, have you got your eye on some parts of the country that you haven't yet explored?
Oh, well, there's several things. I mean, a few exhibits, so that's coming up. Hopefully the country will open up when it's supposed to, and I'll be able to do that. So I have to stay local for some of that, and I'm part of the gallery at the Guild in the town of Chipping Camden, and I have an exhibit coming up with them. So I have to stay around for those obligations that I have, and they're nice obligations to have. And then in the end of July and August and early September, I'm going back to the United States. My youngest son is getting married, so I'm going back there for his wedding. And thank you. And my other son, my older son, lives in Oregon, the state of Oregon. And so while I'm in the States, I'm going to go over there for a couple of weeks. And then I'm going to take a pinhole camera and a film camera and go explore some of the water. You know, Oregon is a state of beautiful waterfalls and beautiful coastline. And I'm going to try to take some nice images there. I'm going to stay there for about 2 weeks and do some exploring. Jealous. So that will be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So those are my first, my first plans are going back to the United States. There's a few things I want to take pictures of in London with a pinhole camera, the flood defenses being one of them. And So I hope to go back to London for an overnight as soon as things open.
Be careful when you go to the London, to the barrier, the Thames barrier, because I've got a beautiful print I made there. But in order to get it, I jumped down onto the beach area, you know, and very quickly there was a security guard shouting at me, bellowing at me, so I had to leave.
I'll keep that in mind. So I went there. This again will tell you a lot about me. I went there specifically to take pinhole pictures of the Thames Barrier, but I wanted to do because I walked the Thames Path. My partner and I walked the Thames Path, and we started at the Thames Barrier. And ever since I saw that, of course, I wanted to go back and do that. But the next time I went, I ended up on the other side of the Thames because I took the wrong train up there, so I ended up isn't where I wanted to be. So I have to go back and be on the south bank of the Thames River to do that. But that's one thing I really want to do, and take some other pictures in London with a pinhole camera, because I think that would be a lot of fun. That's mm-hmm. all I've been thinking about at the moment, because it's hard to make plans when you're not sure when things are going to really open up. So,
well, I think we'll all be okay come late summer, early autumn. And
yeah, I think so. I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. And I was thinking next winter, maybe staying for an extended period of time mm-hmm. down in Cornwall and doing some photography down there.
And it's the best time to go because there's not there. Many. Well, you've only got the locals, haven't you? If you go down there in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's right.
Wonderful. Well, there's some positive things to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Wendy. It's been a real delight.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad I finally came on.
You need to work on Daphne for us now. See if we can get
it. Yeah, come on, Daphne.
I think that's a tough order.
You can do it, Daphne.
Well, keep us posted. Keep us posted on any shows that your work's coming up, and just drop a link into the Facebook group.
All right, I'll do that. Thanks. Oh, and I wanted to say something too. Do you know the photographer, a fellow by the name of?
Yes, I follow him on YouTube. Yeah, he's been doing some great pinhole work.
Yeah, so do I. I would love it if you had him on your program. I think he's seems like such a nice person, and he seems like he's really knowledgeable.
Yeah,
it'd be kind of fun to
check him out on YouTube. But if you don't know him, Corey, he seems a lovely chap who lives. Where does he live? Yorkshire way, I think it is. And he's a real film lover. You know, he's got a variety of different cameras. So he posts really good videos and, you know, talks a little bit about different developing techniques and his scanning methods and stuff. And he seems, you know, just to have a great love of the medium. And just recently he's been doing some pinhole work. I think he was out with a Zero 4x5, wasn't he, Wendy, just recently? And then I've seen something else. He was using another pinhole camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a real nice style in how he explains things. And I really enjoy it. I think he's probably one of my favorite people to watch because he explains things really well.
Yeah.
Martin Henson, Henson. Yeah. Look him up on, I think it's just his name on YouTube. I can't remember now. Yeah. But you'll soon see.
I think so too.
Because his latest post is, with a 4.5 camera, subscribe to him.
Yeah, he did. He took a picture of an angel statue in a cemetery, and he used different focal lengths of his pinhole large format camera. And I thought that was really good, a really good illustration of how close you can get and how different things look. And that's what I mean. I really like how he presents information.
Yeah. Oh, I'll just
check it out.
Okay, where's
the best place for folks to see your work then, Wendy? Mainly in the Facebook group or what?
Well, I think as of today, it is probably best on the Facebook group. But since I've been prodded with an electric caliprod here, I suppose I will try to get my Flickr and Instagram.
Yeah, well, we have a Lenders podcast has a little group, so we'd love to see more of your work in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll give it.
Yeah, and we give a big shout out to Martin Henson, and I'll reach out to him, see if See if he's heard of us, first of all, and then see if he wants to see if he wants to come on.
Certainly he has.
He's heard of you, Corey. All right. Yeah, check out his YouTube channel.
I think I asked him a question actually on his YouTube channel and he answered it right away. So I think he's pretty responsive.
I'll reach out to him. All right. I'll send him a message. Thank you very much, Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy.
Have a lovely week, and we look forward to all those exciting projects that you've got coming up.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, Wendy sent that big album through, which is mind-boggling.
I know, I got anxious, so I went crazy, a little crazy. Sorry about that.
All right.